Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 164, recorded Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: first post-lockdown trips and travel credit cards. Coming to you from the Travel Commons studios in Chicago, Illinois, as the lockdown here is starting to lift. What's opened and what's not is still a bit spotty, though I've managed to hit a couple of microbreweries with outdoor patios. The opening in Chicago is not dissimilar to what I experienced down in Tennessee last month. I was down in Spring Hill, which is south of Nashville, about 45 minutes south of Nashville. I was down there 2 weeks after the non-urban lockdown lifted, which was for every place other than the cities of Nashville, Memphis, Knoxville, and Chattanooga. It seemed that everyone was still trying to figure out what to do. The bar pizza joint that was next to my hotel was fully opened, but the local barbecue joints and the Starbucks were still only doing takeaway, which I guess it makes sense. I mean, it's not like there's a standard playbook on how to reopen an economy. And throughout my consulting career, I've learned that it's always easier to shut things down than it is to start them up. The drive south on I-65 from Chicago is one that, well, I'm not going to say I can do it with my eyes closed, but I've been doing it for almost 40 years now, starting when I was in business school at the University of Chicago and my family was living in Louisville, Kentucky. I mean, look, there's a clump of trees in the median of I-65, in that median between sort of West Lafayette and Crown Point. And that's a milestone for me. I know that when I hit that clump of trees, I'm an hour from home, which I guess just goes to show you how boring the drive through northern Indiana is when trees in the median of the interstate are a notable feature. The drive between Chicago and Nashville, while not the most exciting, especially through Indiana, it does usually require a bit of timing to thread through Chicago, Indianapolis, Louisville, and then Nashville in order to avoid rush hour traffic in each. Now, on this trip, though not so much. I left Chicago after breakfast and was pretty much driving 80 miles an hour most of the way, maybe dropping down to 70 through the cities, especially some kind of S-curve bends on I-65 through downtown Indianapolis. And even though I was going that fast, I was still getting passed by guys going aggressively faster. And the only time I saw police or state troopers was in front of big road construction sites, their cars running their lights in front of the construction, you know, sort of road closed barriers. So more kind of as a warning to speeders than an attempt to get them. It was hands down the easiest drive I've ever done down I-65. I have to tell you that wide open drive may be one of the few things that I'll actually appreciate about this lockdown. Well, that and the $2 a gallon gas along the way. So following up, first, thanks to Travel Commons listener who goes by the handle Abe Froman. For those of you old enough, that's Ferris Bueller's Sausage King of Chicago. Well, Abe, whoever you may be, dropped a 5-star review on the Travel Commons iTunes page. I've been asking for those, and Abe stepped up. Abe writes, "I've been a fan of this podcast for many years. If you're a road warrior or a mileage runner, you'll love the tips to make your travel easier." Well, Abe, thanks very much for the review, and thanks for the kind words. I'm glad you enjoyed the podcast over these many years. Now, last year in episodes 153 and 155, we talked about American Airlines' retirement of their MD-80s, the Mad Dog 80, the plane on which I earned my first Advantage status, gold. That's because there wasn't anything higher back then. Last week, Delta finally retired their last Mad Dogs, MD-88s and 90s. They were supposed to run through the end of the year, but with, you know, sort of late 80s technology and fuel efficiency, or lack thereof, they were among the first planes in the fleet to be grounded when the lockdown hit. Delta said that at their peak, the Mad Dogs accounted for 50% of Delta's arrivals and departures from their Atlanta hub, which will be a relief to longtime Travel Commons listener Darren Mack, who tweeted at me back at the beginning of March a picture out the window seat of a Delta MD-88 just in front of the engine cowl, thanking me for mentioning in episode 155 that whenever me would end up in that same seat, I would wonder, if that engine blows up, will the shrapnel blow out toward the sky or into the cabin? Well, Darren, no more worries. We both survived the MD's backseat. We talked in the past couple of episodes about the first post-lockdown trips probably being by car. More schedule flexibility, no worries of a stranger in the middle seat exhaling 18 inches away from you. So CNBC ran a story last week analyzing the change in the number of requests for directions on Apple Maps throughout this year, 2020. So they ended up using January 13th as the baseline for comparison. And then looking at the requests for driving and walking directions, they had dropped by 50% in the first month of the lockdowns, but then had recovered by May 29th, which was the last day in this data series. Transit directions, so mass transit, buses and subways, actually had dropped by 75% and were still more than 50% down by the end of May. Now, using January 13th as the baseline probably exaggerates that recovery. I mean, you'd think that the number of walking and driving directions requested on a normal Memorial Day weekend would be hugely higher than that number for the second Monday of January, when it's at or below the 30s for, say, two-thirds of the country. But I have to tell you, I don't want to kill a green shoot with too much skepticism. Also last week, American talked about their own green shoots, saying that they'd be operating 55% of last year's schedule in July, up from 20% in April and May. That's driven mostly by demand from states opening up, Texas, Florida, Arizona, rather than cities like New York, Chicago, and San Francisco that are still under stricter lockdown orders or just beginning to open up. If I keep pulling on that thread, though, I'm thinking that by September, all those voluntary capacity limits and empty middle seat promises that all the CEOs have been making, those are probably going to start to fade away. Now, the absence of those emails from the airline and hotel CEOs, I haven't gotten many of those this past week, and which I actually think is yet another green shoot. If things are starting to look up, no need to send me an email extending a bonus award offer or extending cancellation fee waivers. This has cut into a new hobby of mine, though, reading through those emails and comparing the use of phrases like in these uncertain times, in these challenging times, and in these unprecedented times. I've got a bit of a stroke count going right now. Unprecedented is the runaway leader, with challenging second, and in these uncertain times, kind of trailing up third. I've been a Hertz customer on and off over my 35-year travel career, mostly on, though. I started my business traveling when I was at IBM, and in the mid-80s, IBM had like the best rate, the lowest rental car rate that they had, and they'd negotiated that with Hertz. Now, back in episode 144, I talked about getting to know the woman in the little Hertz hut in San Jose back when I started flying, and I was actually living in Dallas and doing a lot of flying into San Jose. And that was when San Jose was still an outdoor airport. And before Hertz Gold and everything else, actually just getting to know that person, that's all you needed for an upgrade. Now, more recently, I've kind of on balance had good experiences with Hertz. So I was bummed for a moment when I saw that they'd filed for bankruptcy. It wasn't surprising, though. Hertz was still carrying a big debt load courtesy of a 2005 private equity leveraged buyout. And we've talked in past episodes about how Uber and Lyft have been sort of eaten away at all the rental car companies, their core airport rental market. So when travel stopped in March and used car auction prices cratered in April, Hertz just tipped over. By now, though, we're kind of getting used to big travel companies cleaning their debt problems through bankruptcy, United and American Airlines being the most recent examples. So I'm not too worried about losing the rest of my gold points. In the short term, though, I will be paying more attention to the mileage on the Hertz cars in, say, that five-star President's Circle aisle. That's where I usually see signs of financial distress, a lot less 500-mile cars and a lot more 25,000-mile cars. And while 25,000 miles on a car doesn't seem like a lot, remember that rental car mileage, it's kind of like dog years. You got to multiply it by 7 to get to kind of regular car mileage. And hey, if you have any travel stories, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can always send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or our Instagram account at Travel Commons, or you can always post them on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is first post-lockdown trips. So we talked about just a few minutes ago, travel is starting to pick up as the lockdowns ease and people want to see something other than the four walls that they've been surrounded by since mid-March. Travel Commons listener Mark Skinner dropped me a line towards the end of May about his first lockdown trip. You may remember Mark from episode 157 back in November when he wrote in to tell us about his day trip from Washington, D.C. to Hong Kong, flying out Monday afternoon, returning Tuesday morning. And that was all to take a NASA cosmic ray detector on an over-the-pole flight. This time, though, Mark writes, "So I had my first trip this past week since the before times. On the way back, I was listening to your recent podcast. Yes, my trip was via automobile down to the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Dare County had recently opened up the day before to allow visitors into the county. Stayed at the Hilton Garden Inn, no servicing of the room, and after a few days at this hotel on the beach, things were looking a little dingy. Tropical Storm Arthur squashed any hopes of long walks on the beach, departed a day early because the storm wasn't letting up. Takeout only that week, and the hotel not helping out by lending us any china, glass, or utensils. Ended up getting a couple of sets at the dollar store. I contrast this to my last trip in the before times to Maui. Just as things were buttoning up, the Grand Wailea was happy to provide all sorts of stuff to enjoy one's takeout on the lanai. That trip got cut short as well due to flights evaporating. A highlight of this trip was stopping for lunch in Virginia Beach, which had recently opened outdoor seating at restaurants, and we enjoyed lunch at a seafood restaurant and an outdoor table by the ocean, and greatly enjoyed ordering food and having it brought to the table. The previous normal meal had been the first evening on Maui before they went takeout only. Next trip that's getting kicked around is Hilton Head in June. That would involve flying. Crossing fingers about a trip to Austria in August." Mark, thanks for sending that along. Your experience out of the Outer Banks was very similar to mine down in Spring Hill, Tennessee. I went back and forth about staying in a hotel versus an Airbnb. Airbnb, not as many people passing through the property, and some time buffer, 24 hours, 72 hours, depends on the property. That time buffer between guests in the same rooms, those were the pluses, but you know, a major hotel chain should have the corporate resources to build out and maybe test a more thorough cleaning program for its properties, maybe even with access to stronger, more industrial cleaners that your typical Airbnb host is not going to have. Well, procrastination ended up making my decision. While I was going back and forth on this, the Airbnb property in Spring Hill I was looking at got booked for the front part of that week. So I ended up in the Spring Hill Hampton Inn, another Hilton brand. That Monday morning, right before I left Chicago, I checked into my room on the Hilton app. It even actually let me pick out my room. Now, this may be old news to Hilton Diamond listeners, but I haven't stayed in a Hilton for probably at least a year or so, and so I haven't been tracking with the developments on their app. when I arrived at 5:30 in the evening, the front doors were locked. But opening that same, opening up the Hilton app, it showed me a digital key that when I pressed on it, it opened the front door. And then up to my room, it opened my room door. I didn't have to actually physically check in at the front desk, which only struck me odd later that evening. I mean, whenever I've checked in on a hotel app before, I've still had to go to the front desk so they could see my ID, which quite honestly was is the reason I've never really paid that much attention to app check-ins. It never really made a whole lot of sense. If I'm checking in on the app, but I still got to go to the front desk and check in anyhow, why go through the extra steps on the app? But here, finally, in this experience, the app actually worked in my mind, and it made all the sense in the world. My in-room experience was the same as Mark's. Nobody servicing the room, though a guy did stop by every now and again with a cart asking if I needed some extra towels. There's no morning coffee or breakfast buffet, though I didn't expect those. And eating out, like Mark said, was mostly takeaway in the room with some cans of local craft beer that I bought from the liquor store a couple of doors down. I was pretty rigorous, though, about dumping that food trash right after eating, waking up to the smell of 8-hour-old barbecue ribs and coleslaw remnants. Never a good start to your day. You know, hotels are saying that all of this, it's all about cleaning and sanitation, but I can't say that I saw any out-of-the-ordinary cleaning or sanitation efforts while I was there. I don't know, maybe what I was really experiencing was the cost reductions that they're using to fund some behind-the-scenes deep cleaning. Who knows? And who knows how long it's going to last? Now, while Mark's highlight was his lunch in Virginia Beach, mine was being able to walk into this little family-owned craft beer joint that's tucked away in a strip mall on Spring Hill's Main Street. I was able to walk in, order a beer, then sit down, and then drink that beer at the bar. Now, you would think, wow, big deal. Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a couple of months, and that's one of the things that I really enjoy when I travel. So, I go into this place every time that I'm in Spring Hill to visit my mother. And so, seeing them open, seeing that they've survived the lockdown, and as a small business, we're able to reopen, that's the kind of place that I wanted to go and leave some money on the table. It was a nice bit of normality coming back post-lockdown, especially since Chicago wasn't going to start opening up till this last week. So don't know where my next trip is yet, but I am keeping my eye on Spain. Whereas Mark is keeping his fingers crossed for Austria in August, I'm keeping my fingers crossed for Spain in September, hoping that there's no second coronavirus wave before our trip to Barcelona. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is travel credit cards. You know, as we start traveling again, we're going to start pulling out those travel cards, Hilton or Delta Amex cards, United or Southwest or Marriott Visas, American Airlines MasterCards. And so I invited Brett Holzhauer, the travel card expert at ValuePenguin.com, a site that goes deep into these cards. I invited him on to give us some of his advice as we unlock down ourselves. First up, Brett reads out the results of a recent survey on travel planning and then talks about travel cards. Brett, thanks for joining us on the Travel Commons podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Brett, wanted to talk to you about a recent survey that ValuePenguin.com has done on travel planning. And we've had sort of an arc through the past couple of episodes of the Travel Commons podcast around travel planning as we think about sort of post-lockdown, pre-vaccine, where people are still concerned about coronavirus and COVID, but they got to move on with their lives. So in the survey that Value Penguin did, where are people going?
One of the biggest notes was the amount of people going to Florida. And it's a couple of reasons. Number one, good weather. Number two, it's affordable. Number three, there's a lot of of the older generation that lives in Florida. So maybe people are kind of itching to see maybe their parents or grandparents or just older relatives. So it's a mixture of all of those things leading to people wanting to travel to really the beaches and get outside.
Well, I think that kind of ties into some things we're seeing, which is more of a focus on outdoors with a theory that coronavirus transmission is less efficient outdoors than indoors.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
As a travel card expert, as people begin to travel again, what are some of the strategies as far as being able to sort of maximize the value of these travel credit cards? Because really, most frequent travelers already have got them in their wallets, at least one, if not multiple award cards, but they'll tend to focus on maximizing award points.
Yeah. So one of the biggest things that's going to eventually happen is huge bonuses. These companies like Chase and American Express, they're going to really incentivize people to get back on the road. So if you're brand new into the points and miles game, this is a very good opportunity to start understanding how this whole thing works. So that way, when these big bonuses start coming out, you can find some really great bonuses to start your travels once again, maybe late 2020 or early 2021. So that's one thing. Number two, obviously the uptick in travel insurance. People can get this travel insurance through credit cards.
Typically, what are the travel insurance capabilities?
A lot of credit cards, beyond the big sign-up bonuses, have travel insurance. And a lot of consumers either don't know that they have it, they forget, or they just don't really pay too much attention to it. So I'm going to use a personal example. So my wife and I both have the American Express Platinum card. It's a $550 annual fee. And your first thought is, oh man, that's a lot of money to invest in a credit card. Is that really worth it? And beyond all of the perks and the sign-up bonuses, the travel insurance through that specific credit card is comprehensive. You get trip cancellation, trip interruption. Also, you get rental car insurance. So it's important to know the difference between primary and secondary. If you do have a credit card that has primary car insurance, that will go first. So your personal car insurance will not be affected.
I've talked in a previous Travel Commons episode about my own personal experience with using the Chase Sapphire Visa that ended up covering an accident in St. Andrews, Scotland. When I got back home, I filed with Chase. Took me a little bit, but I got full coverage on it.
There's also baggage insurance. Those are kind of the big ones. There's also emergency medical assistance. It's important to know that consumers have these protections. I just feel that a lot of times we have these cards in our wallets. We're overlooking the value proposition of what these cards can really do.
Super. Well, let me pivot to your setup as a digital nomad. What are you up to?
My wife and I, we met in 2015. I knew on the first date that I was going to marry her by some way, somehow. And sure enough, ended up happening.
Well, actually, did she have that same sense or was there some selling involved there?
No, we definitely we kind of sold each other and we walked away from that first date knowing that what she sold me on was traveling. I had a traveler's itch. She had the traveling bug. So really sold me on the idea of doing this full-time travel. In July of 2019, we officially sold everything. We drove back to her parents' house in Los Angeles. And then in August of 2019, we took a one-way flight from LAX to Nandi, Fiji. We bounced between 10 countries in 3.5 months. We returned home in December for the holidays from Japan back to Los Angeles. And we had the plan of leaving again in February, and everything unfortunately started to melt. So now we're stuck in Los Angeles, just itching to get back on the road. But yeah, we love taking advantage of rewards. If it wasn't for credit card points and miles, we wouldn't be able to afford these types of travels.
So Brett, when do you think you and your wife will head out next?
Yeah. So our plan was to go to Europe. Obviously, that's been immensely hit by COVID-19. So for us, luckily, so I'm 26 years old. She's 24. We're both very healthy. We're of the mindset that, you know, life is a little bit risky and you have to kind of take those risks to get those rewards. So we kind of approach travel with that mentality that it is a risk. Everything in life's a risk, walking across the street, driving your car. So there's always a risk to it. So I think if I had to guess, probably August, but again, God forbid there's a second wind of coronavirus, we might be here for an extended period of time. But, you know, we are very blessed and very privileged that we have parents that will take us in and we have a free place to stay, which is nice to save up more money for travel and pay down my student loan.
Brett Holzhauer, travel awards expert from valuepenguin.com. Brett, thanks very much for taking the time to join us on the Travel Commons podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 164. I hope you all enjoyed this show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, and Spotify. The links, along with the RSS feeds, are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. Right below that, in the social media section, are links to the Travel Commons Facebook page and Twitter and Instagram feeds. If you've already subscribed, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a review on one of those sites, kind of like what Abe did. Really appreciate the kind words. And if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to mpeacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook, or the Travel Commons Instagram site, or you can always post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails like Mark, tweets, post comments on the website. I really appreciate it. And until we talk again, I hope you guys have a good post-lockdown trip, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.